RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Well, it is officially NFL Draft Week, and it is officially the Tuesday, April 23rd edition of the Landry Football Podcast. It is, as they call in the business, nut-cutting time. It is the time where you are really focusing and honing in on scenarios and possibilities, going over last-minute thoughts. You know, people always ask me, well, what goes on this time? And shouldn't you be done at this time? Well, you are done. You are done setting your board. However, you have to go through different scenarios. This is why you spent all that time evaluating players. So we're going to get into kind of what's going on right now. And I will give you the true inside information of what went on with the Oakland Raiders and their scouting staff and their new GM. So we're going to get into that. Reminder, though, LandryFootball.com, we've got the draft boards up, the scouting reports up. We've got the inside the draft room reports up, every team. And we're going to have what we call, in lieu of a mock draft, which are useless, I will give you, take you inside to what's going on inside. For example, each pick, all right, what are the Cardinals thinking? What are their options? What will they do? And why will they do it? And explain that. And because you don't know what's going to happen, I'm going to give you some possibilities of things that are floating out there that could happen. And if that happens, then ABC is going to happen. If this happens, then I'll go through those different scenarios with you. So you want to check out LandryFootball.com for all of that as we give you an audio post on what's going on. We'll keep you up to date all the way through the draft. As the draft takes place, we will certainly evaluate for you. We're going to break down each team's draft, tell you why they made their pick, the fit, the best option, not a good option. We're going to break it down for you from soup to nuts. So this is where you want to be. If you've not had a chance to check out LandryFootball.com, it would benefit you to do so. We've got our scouting season saving special. Take advantage of that. You will not only get the draft, but the evaluations post-draft. We're going to break down each roster in the league. We're going to break down rosters in college football. We're going to work all of May, June, and July, August, getting you ready for the football season. So take advantage of that. Check out the War Room newsletter. We've got it all for you at LandryFootball.com. Okay, what's going on right now around the league? As I mentioned, yes, you've evaluated all of these players. You've put them in the order, but you're going through different scenarios. Any last-minute intel on medical character? What is going to separate player A from player B? What would you do in this situation versus that situation? These are the things you're working through. If it comes down to this, what do you think? And let's get everybody involved. If you got some disagreements at this point, hash it out. That's why you leave the extra time. Some people may have their say. And listen, the draft room is like any other place. Strong opinions will rule the draft room. Weak opinions won't. You got to have the right makeup in your draft room. You don't want the guys that'll sit there, not say anything, and then after the fact, bitch and complain about, well, actually, we shouldn't have done that. I don't want your opinion after the fact. I want it now. You've got to cultivate that. You've got to teach that. It is just like a head coach has to coach the coaches. The general manager has to scout the scouts. He has to coach the scouts. And if he's never scouted, he's at a huge disadvantage. And there's no respect for him, just like there wouldn't be any respect for a head coach that's never coached, that's suddenly going to be a coach of guys that have coached for years. So this is what's going on this time of year. A lot of that, what do you think other people are doing? What are some of the options? What could happen when we're on the clock? So on and so forth. If I get asked one more time, what are you hearing? I think I'm going to get ill. That's what it's probably the most, agitating week for me, because the hay's in the barn. The evaluations are done. It's just about going through scenarios, situations, and everybody wants to know as much intel as they can. Again, we'll keep you on the minutia of the details and whatnot a little bit better and a little bit different than everyone else. I'll take you inside some of the scouting meetings that I've been involved in without divulging or hurting, you know, clients. I will certainly add some insights that others can't. That's true inside information as opposed to people who just talk and just repeat what they hear. We'll give you some unique information. So you want to check it out at LandryFootball.com. As I mentioned, I want to address the Oakland Raiders situation. If you have not heard, perhaps you're not as in tune to following the NFL draft as maybe some of our other listeners. Maybe you are. I'll recap. Last week, the Oakland Raiders, John Gruden, and their new GM, Mike Mayock, sent their scouts home. Basically sent them home a week prior to the draft with the idea that they're probably not going to bring anybody back. Probably going to let them all go. That's the story. Of course, what everybody is saying, the media is the media. The media tends to take care of their own. Mayock is a media guy, TV guy. He's helped a lot of media members out, so he's curried a lot of favor with those guys. And what you see is a lot of taking up for him that, oh, this doesn't matter. This is everybody does this and all that. Folks, let me tell you, I'm going to tell you the truth of what happened, and let me tell you about how this resonates. And let me just cut to the chase. I hear people say, I heard even a kid, Daniel Jeremiah, says everybody does this. Nobody does this. Now, this is a kid that, while he wasn't a very good scout, was still a scout. This is a case from a credibility standpoint. You lose it when you lie to take care of a friend. Look, I got friends in this business. When they do a poor job, they do something wrong, I call them out. They don't like that. That's too bad. I think credibility is key. Now, first of all, nobody sends their scouts home a week prior to the draft, okay? We had a situation in Cleveland a couple of years ago where they sent two or three guys home because they wanted to make a move and they just didn't feel comfortable with their work and they just let them go. No one has sent an entire scouting staff home. We're not talking about one or two people. We're talking about 10 or 11 people. So all 10, 11 of those people are all bad guys. They all are untrustworthy. I mean, there's not one good guy in the bunch. I mean, wow. First of all, it is not something that people do. Now, here's where people are trying to spin it. Not every organization has their scouts in the draft room on draft day. Okay, when I was in with Belichick, for example, it was just a handful of us in the draft room. Just a small few. Coaches weren't in. Coordinators weren't in, college director, personnel director, you know, just a handful of us, head coach, the cap guy, you know, maybe the pro personnel guy, just a handful of us. Okay, it's fine. Some people do it that way. Some people have everybody in. When I was with the Oilers and the Titans, we ran the draft. Well, we only had about eight of us in there because that's all we had on our scouting staff. So we're all in there. But there's not, wasn't that many. It was only about eight of us total. People can do it their own way in the draft. No one sends their scouts home. This is the story. I mentioned to you, I even answered a couple of questions. When Mike Mayock was hired, what type of GM is he? Well, we don't know. What will he be? Well, he has no background in coaching or scouting. If you liked him on TV, that's great. What you do on TV, gathering information, is not scouting, okay? What Mike did on TV is, I can tell you how he did his work. I saw him do it, you know. He has buddies in the scouting business who help him because they like getting, you know, their name on TV and mention and publicity. You know, they think the PR helps them in their profession. It's kind of the quid pro quo. But Mike gets information. Okay, this guy's good. He's a good knee bender. Okay, great. Yeah, this guy's a really good pass blocker, and he really can slide. And he gets the terms, and he gets the information, and he comes up with a paragraph of information or so on every player, and he regurgitates it on TV. And everybody's, boy, this guy's really bright. Well, he's an information gatherer, and that's really good. And for the people that I take the word of the people that I don't have time to listen to those shows, I'm working and evaluating and doing my work for teams. But the little bit that I've seen him did a nice job on TV. Certainly better than the guys on ESPN who really neither one of those guys have a football background and not very good. At least Mike's been around it and, you know, maybe he's had a better relationship with some of the people in the league, perhaps. And then there you go. He gets good information. He's nothing more than a reporter on the draft. That's what he is. That has a little more working knowledge of the game of football than most media types, because most media types just can repeat stuff. They don't know of the stuff they write. They don't even know what it really means half the time. Okay, that's fine doing it on TV. That's not how you scout, okay? When you run a league's team, you're not going to get help from other scouts. You got to do your own work. And you've got to write detailed scouting reports. Those of you that are members of LandryFootball.com know what the critical factors are at each position. You know that they have to be graded in each critical factor. They need to be graded with verbiage to explain how you came to the conclusion about this guy's a good route runner. Well, who the hell says he's a good route runner? Me? Someone else? Why is he a good route runner? Tell me, show me where he displayed good route running skills. And what is a good route runner? Describe it to me. That's how you scout. And you break down all the other critical factors. And you have to not only describe it in words, but you have to give a numerical grade that says, heard me explain this, right? Is he a 7.4 route runner, a 7.0 route runner, a 6.9, a 6.5, a 6.4? You know what those numbers mean. 6.4 is good. 6.0 is above average. 6.5 is very good. 6.9 is great. The verbiage has to meet, that has to match the numbers, right? That's how you scout. You have to verify your work. You have to show your work. Okay? It's like math class. If you copy off of somebody's paper and you come up with the answer is 250, you could cheat and get that. You got to show your work. Isn't that what your teacher said? This is what scouting is. You got to show your work. And if you can't show your work, you're exposing yourself. And this gets to what truly happened inside the Raiders draft room. I talked to several assistant coaches, talked to a trainer. I did talk to members of the personnel staff. By the way, I made sure to talk to two people in the front office that were still in the organization and will still be in the draft room on draft day. I spoke to two of them. They haven't been sent home because they are administrators that will be a part of this. Okay, so they're going to be there. Made sure to talk to them. And independently, they all told me the same thing of how this played out. As they began to have draft meetings, and there's no question that the scouts, I think, in the Raiders organization, like a lot of scouts in the league, got their feathers ruffled when some guy who's never scouted all of a sudden gets a GM job because he's on TV. And you wonder why these scouts want their names mentioned on TV, because they see that's the fact. That's how you get up to the top these days. It's all perception. It's not experience. It's not knowledge. It's just perception. You know, who has the best hamburgers? Well, it's not McDonald's, but everybody knows McDonald's and Burger King better than any other burger joint, but they're not the best hamburgers, but they're the most well-known. That's kind of where we've gone a lot of times in the coaching and definitely in the scouting profession. So there's, I think, a little bit of an issue there and a problem from the very beginning. So this is not surprising. As there's the word from the inside the room, universally was talked about how Mayock was completely lost in the meetings. When they'd sit there, other scouts would talk about players in great detail, explaining how they got to it. You know, Mayock would chime in, and as you always do, I did it, you always do it. Okay, well, how did you get to that, arrive to that conclusion, Mike? He couldn't defend his arguments. This guy's not a really good blocker. What do you mean he's not a really good blocker? I can show you, again, let's put on the tape. You put on the tape, and he was completely embarrassed because he was wrong on so many. he, again, was just getting information from here or there and putting his thought together. Now, I have no doubt that Mike Mayock looks at film. I'm not going to suggest he doesn't. He's just not trained what to look for. He doesn't have the experience doing this. So he just gleans things that he sees but doesn't know how to break it down into the depth that you need because he doesn't have that depth of knowledge. So his inability to properly read his scouting report and explain his position on players became a source of embarrassment. And quite frankly, it was, you know, no one said anything, but everybody was kind of looking at one another and saying, this guy is clueless. He was embarrassed in the viewing sessions. You know, consistently you could see that, you know, he was just gathering information and really missing on his evaluations, or he was just misevaluating on what he saw. So let me explain how the film sessions work. I've said this in meetings. Everybody gives their detailed scouting report on the player, and you normally put up a video where it's a cut up of 40, 50 plays where you can see what a guy can do and what a guy can't do. And you're going to see it. If you still have disagreements, then you put on game tape. You put on 2-3 game tapes. You watch it together. Well, when they did that, again, scouts who had done their homework, had been on the road all year long. By the way, this scouting staff has built a pretty good roster for the Raiders that were looked like playoff caliber before Carr got hurt. And then, you know, they've taken a step back from a roster. So it's not like these guys haven't won. They've done a good job of building a roster. But whether they're a fit or not, that's going to be up to the Raiders to decide, and that's life in the NFL. But Mayock clearly saw the difference between being a TV scout and a real scout. Now, to give you an idea of an example of what I'm talking about, when the year we drafted Eddie George, my head coach, my running back coach, my general manager, a couple of people said, we have a one back offense. We want a physical type runner. It can be a down in, down out guy. This guy's not tough enough, is what I was told. He doesn't run over people. Are you kidding me? I scouted the guy. I've looked at all the games. They're just sitting there looking at cut ups and highlights, and they don't know what the hell they're talking about. I tell you the games. Let's put on the tape. Room got real quiet until I spoke up and said, anybody come to any conclusions yet? Well, after about the eighth guy that he ran over, just cold cocked, they saw, yeah, he's not what we thought. You were right. My point is no, at that point, we weren't going to take Tim Biakabutuka. We weren't going to take Lawrence Phillips. Lawrence Phillips ended up being off the board anyway. But we were taking Eddie George because I'd got it right, because I had done the work, and I wasn't a telephone scout or a TV scout. I had done my job, not because I'm smarter than anybody else, but I'd done the work. I'd put in the details that it takes to know everything there is to know about these players. Let me explain that scouts, listen, and scouts are like any other profession. Some are better than others. You think every player in the league is as good as the next? Of course not. You think, I don't mean to point fun to anybody, but you think Blake Bortles and Aaron Rodgers are the same because they both play quarterback? Of course not. There's a huge difference. I don't mean to pick on Blake Bortles, but you know what I mean. Well, coaches, I mean, you think Bill Belichick and, you know, I don't want to mention any names, but, you know, you throw in the blank, fill in the blank. There's a big difference. Why wouldn't you think there's a big difference in one scout to another? Some guys are not as good as others. As I said before, it takes 5 years in the league to really even learn how to scout, because you have to go through a cycle of players that go through the league, make it or don't make it, and you have a really frame of reference of how to evaluate. The scouts are the ones in the organization that know most about these players. And in the Raiders draft room, I can tell you, they all know more about scouting and drafting as opposed to someone who's never been in a draft room. Because of, I think, some of the tense nature of how the scouts felt towards Mayock, and Mayock's inability to perform very well in his duties early on, I think it led to Mayock being very insecure, and he's trying to close off any leaks. Listen, I get the whole, if there's a leak, you got to take hold of that situation. There's no doubt about that. Let me explain something to you. these scouts already know who Mayock and Gruden like and don't like. They don't need to see the board today. They already know. And you're not going to hear people on TV say this, again, because they're going to speak up, particularly on the NFL Network, because they're going to speak up for their boy, Mayock. But here's the thing. They already know who they like. Now the problem is when you send them home, you're throwing gas on the fire. Because if any of these scouts were disloyal, they're really going to spill the beans now. Because here's the thing. If they were kept in the building but not in the draft room, you could still maintain your secrecy and protect yourself. But, and I'm going to get into the importance of why you want them around in the building anyway, but at least, you know, they're employed. At least they're engaged to some degree. And if anybody steps out of line, again, you can close them off from the draft room. But if anybody, you don't like the way they're interacting or handling it, then now you know who you can trust or who you can't. Because that was the comment, right? We don't know who can we trust and who we can't. So all 11 are going to go? Oh, man. No, what happened was he was embarrassed, and he wants to have people that he can control. And the people that are in that room don't respect him. And therefore, you know, you got to move on. Well, listen, I get it. If people don't respect you, you're the boss, you got to move on from them. I get it. But there again, if you hire someone that hasn't earned respect, then you're going to have a hard time finding people that are going to respect you. Oh, you'll find people that you can hire as scouts, but hiring quality scouts is going to be really tough for Mayock because scouts don't respect him. They may use him and like him on the outward, but they don't really respect him. So if these guys were really disloyal, they're really going to be spilling the beans now. And teams around the league are going to know it and are going to use them for it, and they're not going to hold it against them. If you kept them in the building, then there's, to be honest with you, those scouts wouldn't be talking to other teams, because if they did, they would be showing their disloyalty to the very teams that they'd be trying to catch on with another job. Now, people in the league feel it's justified if they want to share information or whatnot. I don't agree with that, but some think, hey, they're just in doing whatever they need to do to protect themselves. So don't believe that the Raiders board is going to look different. The scouts know the game plan. They know what's going on. They know who they're going to take. I mean, they know all that. They know it based upon being in the room with the guy. Let me explain something. Scouts' contracts run through the draft, you know, May 1st. Unlike coaches whose contracts run through the end of the season, like February 1st, February 15th. So the proper way to do something like this, if you have your ego in check, is to keep scouts in the building and keep them out of the draft room, okay? Places you can have them, and then use them for their intel. Because here's what happens. Well, we have all the information we don't need anymore. BS. People that are saying that obviously don't know what the hell they're talking about and have never been a scouting director, have never done this. I'll explain it to you. Scouts have the intel on football character, personal character, toughness, mental toughness, physical toughness, training room toughness. And do they put that in reports? Yes. But when you get into the middle rounds, these scouts are the ones that best evaluate these traits beyond what's in the scouting report. Hey, coach, GM, whoever, this guy, you want to go with this guy over this guy. You want to go with this linebacker over that linebacker, because here's the difference. I know I both said this, but here's what makes this guy a little bit better. The guy that knows the player and have scouted him for 2 years knows him better than somebody that watches him on TV and goes to a couple of all-star games in the combine and has a 15-minute interview and all that. That's the difference. They can compare one player to another in specific diagnostic evaluations. The other thing that's pivotal, undrafted free agents. Scouts are the only ones that have the handle on who's best, who the best fits are for you. This is where you unearth a Philip Lindsay. You think John Elway decided to Philip Lindsay? He didn't know who the hell Philip Lindsay was, and he was right there in Boulder. Scouts said, this is the guy over that guy. Now, maybe they should have drafted him late. I mean, you can make that claim. But the point is, you know, why didn't they? Well, if you check it out, the scouts are the ones that often are, you know, are pushing for a guy to get drafted in the third or fourth round, and they don't because maybe the GM or the head coach wants to go in a different direction, another position. But the scouts know the players. The scouts know how to evaluate players if they're good and they're trained correctly. They are the ones that are going to have the most intel. And if they don't, you got the wrong scouts. You need to get better scouts, and you need to train them better. But you can only do that if the guy that's training them is a guy that's done it before. And if your GM has never coached or scouted, then that is no different than a head coach gets hired who's never coached. How do you think that would go over? Stupid, isn't it? You'd never consider that. Well, that's exactly what you do when you hire a GM who's never done it. So you miss out on that. Look, if you keep the scouts in town, you keep them out of the draft room, you get all this intel. You keep them engaged and employed. So despite, they're going to talk. No, they're not going to talk because if you don't have them in the draft room and you want to protect, you can still do that with them being in town, but you can still tap into them. You still keep them engaged. And now you know that if they go and talk to another team and say things, that team's knowing that they're going to get somebody that if they talk when they're still in the building with the Raiders, then you're not going to want to hire them with your team because they talk. But when you send them home and you basically fire them, that's basically saying you're done. And now you're spilling the beans on it. Now they're going to, you know, I think they've created a bigger league problem potentially. So I think it was not a smart thing to do. But again, you'll hear every media person, oh, it was smart to do. Yeah. Ask yourself how many of those people have ever been in a draft room. Ask how many of them actually know what the hell's going on. Or the ones that do, they just don't want to maybe hurt their friend's feelings, who's a friend, member of the media. So let me other say this as well. Scouts today are different. And I know this because I'm involved in helping people, but most of the people that get in today are young people. They're so young, they haven't had time to scout. And they're trained to be information gatherers, where they gather information and intel, which is really important. And they get measurables, they get basic things. And quite frankly, they're not as good at evaluating. And so I do think there becomes an issue there. The problem is if you have young scouts that are not really good evaluators, that they're information gatherers, and you combine that with GMs that have no background in coaching or scouting, then who's exactly doing the job? You've got the coaches that become involved. They can only get involved at the end of the year. They can't tell you the intel about what makes the guy tick versus another. Understand that the importance of having not only boots on the ground, but qualified eyes that can discern information, get the right information. There's information you can gather in the fall that's very valuable, that's different than the information in the spring. See, in the spring, coaches tend to tell you, college coaches, that their players are great. During the fall, they tend to be a little bit more honest. Okay, just lost a game. This guy made a bunch of mental errors. This guy didn't work hard in practice. You find out some of that stuff. You're not getting that in the spring. You get it in the fall. There's only one person doing that. That's the scout on the ground. And again, some of that's documented in the scouting report. But when it comes to a head and you got to make decisions, that's the difference between getting a fourth round pick that makes your team and is really good or making a bad selection and guy that can't help you. I think in this day and age of fantasy football, everybody thinks they can do this. And I have no doubt that there are a lot of people that with the proper training could do a very good job. But when you take shortcuts and you're given an opportunity, and I think it's great, you know, for Mayock got an opportunity, that's what he wanted, great personally. But from a Raiders standpoint, from an NFL team standpoint, do you want a head coach that's never been a coach, being your head coach, being a figurehead? Or do you want somebody that has background in coaching, that can coach the coaches? I want that guy that can coach the coaches. I want my GM that can oversee everything and could teach not only the scouts, but teach the personnel people And people say, well, the college director can teach the scouts. Who's teaching the college director? If you work your way up and you're the best at what you do, then that's when you become successful. I'm not saying what people have to do. People can do what the hell they want to do. I'm telling you, if you're going to be the best and you're going to give your team the best chance to win, your general manager should have the best eye for talent because he's proven it through every step of the way. And once he proves it, you can hire a good cap guy and good people under him to help you navigate and figure it out. But if your top guy is not a football guy that's worked his way up from coaching and scouting, you've just decreased your chances of winning significantly. Just important to understand that there is a lot to this. And that's how it played out. That's what led to it. So as we recap, the story is in this contentious relationship between the scouts and Mayock and Gruden. Gruden's a part of this too. But a lot of it is, this is the holdover from Reggie McKenzie's staff. And these are guys that all of them have a lot of experience. By the way, Sean Harrock's been in the league forever. He was groomed under Ron Wolf. His dad, Ken Harrock, was a former Raider and a very successful personnel guy in his own right. Dave McLuhan has been around forever. Dave Rosano, Trey Scott. Now, the interesting thing is Raleigh McKenzie, Reggie's twin brother, still on the staff. Zach Crockett, remember him, player at Florida State, been scouting and learning in the league. Number of other guys, a lot of experience. And again, let me remind you, whatever you think, this group did a really nice job. It's pretty clear that what is happening in Oakland is Mark Davis has hired John Gruden and he's going to let John Gruden do whatever he wants. John Gruden hires a buddy of his, Mike Mayock, because Mayock, not a strong football guy, is going to do whatever Gruden tells him to do. So Gruden didn't want a strong football guy. Like he had good relationship with Bruce Allen and worked with Bruce Allen a couple of scouts. Why? Because Bruce is an administrator. Let John do what he wants to do. And, you know, Bruce could talk in the press conferences just like Mayock could talk. And it's Gruden's show, 100%. Mayock's just there to do whatever Gruden wants. That's the way it's going to be. That's why he got hired. He didn't want a strong football guy telling him what to do. Gruden has got $100 million coming to him, and he's going to do it his way, and he doesn't care what anybody else thinks. So he hired somebody that basically is going to do what Gruden wants to do. If it was a strong football guy, wouldn't put up with that. You wouldn't get that type of guy that would be willing to come in and work for Gruden. Oh, you could find people. You just couldn't find the qualified people that are worth their salt. That's the way it's happening. And the getting exposed in the draft room is embarrassing. So what do you do? Well, we'll just get rid of all those people. Then we'll hire some people that will be, you know, obviously not the top of the litter in the scouting profession because they're not going to come and work for Mayock and Gruden. They're going to come. They're going to get people that are not very qualified. And then you don't have anybody that can really train them. And I think you got long-range problems potentially there. But that's for another day and another conversation. Oh, by the way, I'll end it with this. Well, I've got a couple of questions to get to before I head on out. How did this story leak? It's funny how the media automatically assumes that the scouts leaked it to the media. Not so. It was Mayock that leaked it to his buddies at the NFL Network. That's how the story got out. The scouts don't want this out. It's an embarrassment to them. But Mayock admitted to it behind the scenes. I asked a member of the Raiders front office. And no, Mike shared that with his buddies at the NFL Network. So that's how the story got out. Not by any of the scouts telling them. Now, I don't know if the scouts were called. First of all, these people that are reporting, NFL Network and other, they don't even know who the hell the scouts are in the organizations. I mean, if I asked you as fans, most people know who the general managers are, people in talk radio, whatever, they could name three scouts and on their team that they cover every day. They don't know who the hell these people are. They don't see them. They don't talk to them. So these guys are not talking to anybody in the media world. But I think that some of them were contacted by the media if they have their contact information. And I think they maybe confirmed that it happened, but that's not where the leak came from. So that is the story firsthand from inside that draft room, how that played out in the Raiders scouting fiasco issue. All right, answer some questions. Matt has a few questions. Can you separate the reality and hype of Brian Bosworth? Brian was a really good college player. He was a good tackle-to-tackle defender, physical run defender. He was a little bit too much into himself as the Boz and not Brian Bosworth. He was a much better football player than he ended up playing at the pro level, because he did not play to the speed game quite as well, and he didn't dedicate himself. He spent more time doing stuff off the field, and quite frankly, he could have been a lot of player. Just was the end. He was a really good college player, got into being the Boz instead of Brian Bosworth, and that limited his ability. Matt also asks about Warren Moon. Was he really as good as he portrayed? He put up great stats, just like Texas Tech. Well, it's two different offenses. Completely. The Oilers played a run and shoot offense. I'm well aware of what they ran and inflated his passing statistics. If you're grading a player off of statistics, then you don't know how to grade and you're not paying attention to the right things. You have to watch Warren Moon throw the football. You have to watch him lead the team. You have to watch him make all the decisions and call the plays at the line of scrimmage. That's what you have to understand. He would have been better in another offense because he could throw the football accurately downfield. I think that the run and shoot offense inflated his statistics, but I think it hampered his ability to play winning football because he had to score a million points and the defense could never do what they needed to do to close games out. They didn't have a running game in short yardage to help them out. They didn't have a tight end to work. So their offense, while statistically giving him a bump, I thought completely handcuffed his ability. He asked what would he did running with a team like Kansas City. He'd have done a lot better. Probably would have made a difference in them getting over the top. Matt also asked about assessment of Jerome Brown. Jerome Brown was a great player coming out of Miami. He was a great player with the Philadelphia Eagles. Died very young, no question, tragically. He was a great player. I mean, he was an absolutely great player, and certainly on that defensive line with Reggie White was a big part of it, and I think would have been a gold jacket player along with Reggie White had he survived. Kevin asks, I've listened to most of your audio draft room team analysis. I have a few questions. Houston Texans, you're critical of Deshaun Watson to hold on to the ball too long. Not critical. That's just an evaluation. Are you referring to when he's in the pocket or when he's extending plays? All of that's within the pocket. Extending plays are completely different. Thought that was understood. I apologize for that. You hold on to the ball too long. All you got to do is sit there and understand on a 3- and 5-step drop. If you study the quarterback critical factors, how quickly the ball needs to come out, his getting to his progressive reads. Again, he waits a little too long to hold the ball. That's okay because he can avoid and scramble and do other things, but that's the reason why he gets hit more than he should, because they're protecting him long enough, but he doesn't get the ball out quickly enough. It's not a criticism. It's an evaluation that's very, very clear. Minnesota Vikings, how much of the offensive line struggles do you attribute to coaching and schematics? It has a lot to do with the personnel more than anything. I think you can always augment and help an offensive line with your play calling. I think some of that can be helped in terms of schematics and teaching, but is mostly due to personnel. Kansas City Chiefs, you don't seem too excited about this. You don't seem too excited about this defense, and Steve Spagnuolo is a good fit. Is he capable of implementing a bend but don't break defense? Would this be sufficient? The issue is Steve Spagnuolo has only really had good defenses when he's had great talent. His teams rely on good front four pressure, and he didn't do a very good job of that when he wasn't with the Eagles. Now, when he was a defensive line coach and worked with Jimmy Johnson with the Eagles, again, very good defensive line. They played very well. But he doesn't have the type of talent, doesn't have the pass rusher. So the problem is, whole bend but don't break, that stuff's thrown out there. That doesn't really apply in most situations. Bend but don't break means that you give up a lot underneath, but you play well in the red zone. in order to be able to play well in the red zone or back in your end, you've got to be able to have the talent to rush the passer. Can he do some things schematically to work around his personnel? Well, we'll see, because that's going to be something he's going to have to do. The point is, like most coordinators, you're only as good as the players that you are, but some coordinators do a better job of covering up some of the issues that just hadn't been Steve's background in the past. If you look at the, with your theory is, okay, the Chiefs score a lot of points, play bend but don't break, and situational football will be great, right? Well, how did that work when he was the defensive coordinator of the Saints, when they scored all those points? The reality is the defense couldn't stop anybody. You have to get stops on defense, and we'll see if he can do that better than Bob Sutton, who's been there a long time. And listen, I thought was a little bit of a scapegoat, but you can question some of the defenses that he had with better personnel. I think this is a real question mark. So let's see how this plays out. All right, folks, we appreciate it. We're going to try to get another one up for you on Thursday, draft day. It'll probably be brief. It'll be an update on some things that are going on and philosophically what goes on the day of the draft. Remember, for all the inside information of what's going on with this draft, the news and notes, the mock drafts, the scenarios, we're going to have all that for you. We've got our draft boards, our scouting reports, all of that at LandryFootball.com. So take advantage of it today. It's not too late, but time's running short. Take advantage of it, and we'll get you set up for an entire year, this draft, and we'll take you into this offseason and get you in prepared for the football season, breaking down all the rosters. Check us out in our newsletter, Landry Football, the War Room newsletter at LandryFootball.com as well. Talk to you Thursday, everybody.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at Landry Football. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
I'm Jerry Petuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.